This is the Top 25 Rundown, and here's your host, Alan West.
Welcome to the Top 25 Rundown, presented by the Sportscast. Today is March 22nd, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all your channels, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch.tv, and Apple Podcasts. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and review. It'll help us out tremendously. You can listen to us on your smart speaker, play Sportscast. You can also visit us on the sportscast.net. Also follow us on Twitter at the Sportscast1 and check out our app, the Sportscast, in the iOS App Store. Hello, my name is Alan West. Welcome to Top 25 Rundown. Tonight we are joined once again by Irwin Dudley, former player at the University of Alabama, 2002 SEC Player of the Year, 2019 SEC Legend, and he played 13 years overseas. How are you doing tonight, Irwin?
I'm great, man. How y'all are doing?
Doing well, and also we had the pleasure of being joined tonight by Bob Alves, high school sports commentator, public address announcer, host of Sports Buffet, and multiple other jobs and activities. Bob, how are we doing, sir?
I'm a non-SEC legend, so I'm well.
And I had a feeling when I heard that Irwin would come on, I'm like, okay, this is something Bob is going to appreciate, and he's not going to be able to, like, yep, I've made it now. I got to talk to an SEC legend. So, Bob, what I could do today, you're welcome, sir. I hope you appreciate this. And
I do very much. Irwin Dudley is greater than Dominique Wilkins in my eyes.
I appreciate that. I do.
Well, gentlemen, we have made it to the tourneys. And it's been crazy.
Very.
I mean, from watching Farley Dickinson not even win their conference tournaments to win the play-in game, then they win their first game, which I'm not sure if I picked that or not, but you know what? It doesn't even matter anymore, because when I looked at my bracket, I almost started crying. Because, they played Purdue, and they beat Purdue. I had Purdue in a national championship game, so that killed it. But they made it to the round of 32 against Florida Atlantic, and that was a good game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not surprised that I believe the coach's name is Tobin Robinson.
Tobin Anderson. Was the coach's name, by the way. Was the coach's name.
Yep, he was.
Moved on to Iona.
Yep. After Rip Pitino took the St. John's job, he was able to upgrade, you could say.
Right.
But even still, when Farley Dickinson made the tournament 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the last time they made it, the school put up a banner for them because they had won one game. I'm pretty sure they're getting another banner after what they did upsetting Purdue.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's the only second time the 16th seed has beaten a one. Like you said, Tobin Anderson, in your words, upgrades from Farley Dickinson to Iona. And, you know, this is the thing. If any coach from that 13 to 16 seed wins and they're a one-bid conference, and we'll call it I don't want to call it a bottom five conference, but one of those true one bid leagues. You're never going to get two in from that league. Then the coach can almost kind of strike while the iron's hot and get, quote unquote, a bigger job.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, with all due respect, he deserves it. I mean, Farley Dickinson, let's be honest, he made it on a technicality, but they're going to be known for this forever just because shocking Purdue, because when they played that game, they made Zach Edey score. He scored 25 points, but they made him have to try to go out on the perimeter, which when you're doing that in the game with the way that their offense was, Purdue just was unable to replicate it and just be able to defend it. And because of that, we got I know UMBC against Virginia was a huge upset. This one feels like it was a bigger upset to me, honestly.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, you have a team like that come in and beat Purdue. You know, a lot of people predicted them to go to the Final Four and even possibly win the championship. And then, like you said, what they did with Edie, they made him get out on the perimeter guard. And if you got a guy that can knock down some shots, that's, you know, that's a five man, it's hard for a big guy like him to be able to guard. And, you know, and they spread it out, and it's hard for him to help him recover as well, because, you know, if you got guards that can beat the other guards one-on-one, it's nobody there around the basket to help. And so, and that's what Fairleigh Dickinson did, and that's how they got the win.
You know, the differences that I look at in the Virginia-UMBC game and Purdue and Fairleigh Dickinson, Virginia was never really in that game late. Fairleigh Dickinson was, and I think you kept thinking, mm-hmm. all right, Purdue's going to take over. Purdue's going to take over. Purdue's going to take over.
Yep.
Purdue didn't take over.
Never.
You know,
never did.
And, you know,
never did.
That's why I think it could be considered a bigger upset. But, you know, I mean, anytime a one goes down to a 16, for heaven's sakes, it's only happened twice in the history of the whole tournament.
Hey, Bob, you made a good point, though. You were looking at, you know, Virginia take over. And just think about in the past, like, how many teams that are, you know, come from these Power Five conferences where they do take over games like that, whether it's, you know, because they have more talent than other guys or whatever it may be. But now I think that what's happening across the board, I think that talent is being spread out amongst everywhere. And so it makes it a more balanced field. And you have some guys that on those smaller, at those smaller schools that could play in Power Five schools, but, you know, the transfer portal and all that stuff, guys have been able to transfer freely. And so, and as a result, I think those teams right there, they get a big benefit from that.
That is true. I did see that for Tovin Anderson, when he came to Fairleigh Dickinson, he had been in a Division II school, and I believe he had three or four of his players from that school come with him to Fairleigh Dickinson, so they already knew how his system was. And because of that, that made, I'd say, the biggest difference we're going to see in the tourney this year. I mean, we're going to see that we still have some of the blue bloods in, but compared to what we expected on after day one,
yep,
it's already just like, I think we're going to have to try to shake things up, because, I mean, it took 2 days to lose every bracket from being a perfect bracket.
And what a great recruiting tool for Fairleigh Dickinson, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you win this game and, you know, I'm not saying that people are just going to be flocking left and right, but, you know, one thing about it is when Michael Vick did all he did at Virginia Tech, it made the enrollment of Virginia Tech a lot harder to get into. At one point, I might have been able to get in. But once Vick started doing his stuff, you know, I mean, you were looking at having a GPA of a 3 to where you needed to have a GPA of maybe a 3.5. And mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. half a point is a big deal.
You know, I had I have a friend of mine who lives down in Lynchburg who played football with Michael Vick. So he's told me stories about that and just how it was being there. So, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about for that. So for some of the other games that we saw for the first 2 days, what games do you think were, I guess, one of the bigger upsets? For me, it would definitely be Kansas and Arkansas.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I definitely had Kansas.
See, I had Kansas falling in round two just to the wrong team. I had Illinois. But, I mean, you know, one thing that sticks out to me is Virginia and Furman. I mean, just the way Virginia loses the game with your, 20 years returning senior, throw the ball away. 99 times out of 100, that's going to work. Mm-hmm. It just happened to be the one time.
One time it did.
And then to get the steal and to make the pass, you still need the guy to hit the shot. Another 99 out of 100, he's not going to make it. One time.
Yeah.
He did. So, and again, Alan, I come from a biased land of ACC country to where people always are going to pick an ACC team to go to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight. You know, one thing I would say is maybe a bit of a concern going forward is Houston needs Sasser at 100% or close to. They're in trouble otherwise.
Yeah. 100% they are. I think that Arizona, for me, Arizona being upset, I think that was big as well. You know, I definitely had Arizona going further than what they did. And they broke my heart too, because I watched Arizona several times this year, and I thought they were one of the most dominant teams, you know, in college basketball at times. And so for them to lose to Princeton, I mean, you know, it was a shocker to me.
Yeah, and some of these games, I think the problem is, I don't want to say they're not close, but it almost looks like your higher seed team is playing like an underdog at some point. And I know it's a tournament, and I know, you know, it's a different feel and atmosphere. But, yeah, I mean, I'm totally agree with Irwin right there. Arizona, I think a lot of people had them. They were a very trendy pick to go deep. And, unfortunately, Tommy Lloyd and his group is sitting at home.
Yep.
No, I know for me, I picked them to make it to the lead eight. So when I saw that was very sad. I'm still trying to recover from that. But you know what? It could be worse. Luckily, I did not spend any money on this bracket. Otherwise, I probably would be crying right now.
Yeah, and you know, one that kind of blew me away is I had Baylor going a long way, Final Four, and you know, now Baylor is normally the trendy pick, because you'll always see some article that says advice on how to fill out your bracket. And a lot of time it'll say, go with a good point guard, go with a good big man, go with an experienced coach. Purdue, fail on the big man. Baylor, fail on the coach. I'm sure I can think of somebody that failed on the point guard too, but it's just the madness of March.
Well, I think you said the coach. I think with Kansas, I mean, you know, I think Kansas, they had their woes during the year, but I think with them not having Bill Self, I think that played a part as well. The reason why they couldn't get it done. I mean, if you just go back and look at the finals in the Big 12 tournament, you know, with what happened, 20-point win for Texas. I watched them play Texas at home during the regular season. And, you know, Bill Self was on the sideline and they still struggled. But, you know, for them to come and lose by 20 in the Big 12 tournament and then get bounced in the NCAA tournament, I mean, you never would expect that. And, you know, just like you said, I think it coaching, experienced coaching, that's something else. And I'll bring up another thing about experienced coaching. I had Duke beating Tennessee, and I should have experienced coaching. I still went with Barnes versus Shire. And, you know, and Tennessee, you know, Tennessee, they prevail. I've watched Tennessee play several times, and I watched Duke. And, you know, Tennessee, they've played really well at times, especially on the defensive end. You know, they struggled at times on offense, but on the defensive end, there's one of the most consistent defensive teams out there. And, you know, Duke was just their normal Duke. I know they had their woes, but they still won a bunch of games. So I had just had Duke going. I should have thought about that a little bit more before I made that pick.
It's funny, Alan. Every bracket show I watched said, don't pick Tennessee against Louisiana. And you can pick them against Louisiana and then pick them against Duke, and you're good. Like Irwin said, Rick Barnes does some – you know, Rick Barnes is probably one of the best coaches that doesn't get credit for being one of the best coaches. So, yeah. I mean, you know, you snooze, you lose if you picked Duke.
I really did. I was one of them.
I picked him to lose in the first game, so I messed up already. But you know what? I did pick Tennessee to make it a little bit. So that's one of the few teams I still have left. I don't know if you guys watched the UConn and Iona game, but in that game in the second half, UConn, one of their, let's see if I can find a player's name, he, Sinugo, Adonis Sinugo. In the second half, I believe he scored 25 points. I mean, if he hadn't gone off in the second half, he probably would have been in trouble. But because of the way he was shooting, it was not only that he was going in the paint, also He was making his shots. He was shooting all like shots based on the point area. He was making all them. Plus, he even made a three. I think he made 2 3-pointers. I mean, he was just all over, and he was the player of the game without a doubt. So, I mean, if this could be like his coming out party during the tournament, UConn could definitely make some noise as far as they can go.
Yeah, UConn's a very good team. I think they were a trendy Final Four pick by a lot of people. It's funny because a lot of people talk about the other Hurley, the one that played at Duke and the one that's coaching Arizona State. But Danny Hurley has done a very, very good job at UConn. And that Patino guy, I think, at Iona, who was at Iona, who's now at St. John's, I think things will be okay with him. He's had a few wins over the years from what I hear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That, I mean, he has won 2 titles, even if he had to vacate one. But the thing for him, because he was clear to the wrongdoing over what happened at Louisville, he just was clear to that this year or last year, I believe. That's why St. John's, the fans were there. He, when he did his opening press conference, said, look, he's made mistakes. He's gotten past them. Let's see how he's going to do here.
He's the youngest-looking 70-year-old I've ever seen.
Yeah, that caught me off guard when I saw that. I'm not going to lie. But, I mean, he's a heck of a coach. And, I mean, even with him coaching in the NBA, and then he went over to Greece for 2 or 3 years while he was dealing with everything at Louisville. And, I mean, then still to be able to come back to Iona.
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask you guys a question real quick. What do you guys think about the little stuff where the reporters are interviewing the coaches during the game, like during the timeout? Patino looked like he was the most annoyed by that, like, than anyone to me.
I mean, I think it's good that they can do that to get some type of, you know, get some more interaction with the coaches and, right, you know, get some more interaction, you know, that between the fans. But again, you know, and I understand, you know, it's about marketing and about money and all that stuff, giving fans a different side of the game. But the coaches, you know, when you're on the sideline, it's just like, for the most part, when, you know, you're a player, when you're on the sideline and, you know, you're locked in on the game, like, your mind is locked in on what's going on right out there in front of you in that square or whatever. You're not thinking about what's going on behind you, about doing a report. And I can see why they would annoy him. Because to think about it, though, he's an older guy, and this has never happened to him before. And so for this to happen to him now, this time, you know, I can understand that. But, you know, it's one of those things that they do in the NBA a lot. They do in the NBA now. But, you know, I think it's good. But at some point, you know, I think it should be an assistant coach.
Right.
They should do it. We know, especially depending on the magnitude of the game, I think it should be an assistant coach, because, again, coaches, that's their job to coach the players, and they're locked in on that. You know, they're not trying to worry about a, you know, sideline report or anything like that.
I think Duke would use the assistant coach a lot when Krzyzewski was coaching, because you would always see, like, an assistant coach. So I don't know if Krzyzewski pulled the Krzyzewski card and said, I don't want to do this or what, but it was always like, you know, a Johnny Dawkins or a Steve Wojciechowski or somebody else of the assistant realm. But I'm with you 100% on that, Erwin. I mean, let the assistants do it. And, you know, I think it's fun, but I just love to see people get irritated, because I think in the NBA, you get 2 questions per, and no one hates it more or plays the I hate it more role than Greg Popovich did.
Oh, yeah. That's
the only sport I've seen right now where they will interview assistant coaches instead of the head coach is when you watch hockey. Like, when you watch them during a period, I've seen when they'll talk with the assistant coach instead of trying to get and interrupt the head coach. That, or like at halftime, or when they do their intermissions, they'll talk with the coach at halftime, at the intermissions as well. But they don't talk to the head coach. Head coach, they wait till he has his press time, usually after the game's over. Then they'll talk with him. So, I mean, it really just depends on that. And actually, don't know if you guys are watching the NIT game of Vanderbilt earlier today.
I know UAB. I didn't get a chance to see it.
Well, what happened is with about 51 seconds left to go, Vanderbilt had driven the ball up and was getting ready to drive. But the player who had the ball, he slipped and fell on the ground. And so he was trying to hold the ball. And was Jerry Stackhouse was on the sideline yelling timeout. They couldn't hear him. And because of that, turned out to be a jump ball and UAB got possession. And Jerry Stackhouse was pretty upset about that because when you're watching the last 50 seconds, they had four or five different times they could go down there to make a shot. They turned it over at least two or three of those times. And only made one or two more shots to end the game. And it just, they had a chance, but when the player was trying to split the zone and he would try to get past the two players, he would either slip or he would turn the ball over. And once that happened, UAB was just able to steal the ball, and then they were able to make all of their foul shots at the end too. So, I mean, when you do that, it's hard to win.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So, even though we can always talk about the NIT later, but that was just something I noticed. So, like, for what you're talking about for a timeout and talk with the coach, it just made me think of that because that was the way Stackhouse had gotten upset. I can understand that, but still, when the referees are trying to focus on the game, the way that the NIT had the stand set up for Vanderbilt, they had it set up like it was for the NCAA tournament. Like the final, you know how you've got the court higher, and then when a timeout is called, you'll see the players come up.
Yep.
So they basically had that, except instead of having the players on the sidelines, they had them near the baskets on both sides.
No, were they at Vanderbilt?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how their court designed. Their court is designed like that. So that's probably like the only court that I know of. Like I played there, yeah. Their court is designed like that. The players, you know, the benches and stuff on the opposite end of the goals. And it is, like you said, the fans kind of go down the court, to kind of go down like under the floor a little bit. And it's definitely a different type of design. It takes some time to get used to it because, again, you're beside the basket on one end and the other team is on the other side. And so you have to come all the way to the middle to the scores table. So it's different. But, yeah, that's just how their court's designed, though.
Okay. Well, I mean, that being said, when Stackhouse was trying to call a timeout, he was having to move. Yeah, he was too far away to when they finally were able to hear for the timeout. They had already said it was UAB's ball and a jump ball. So, I mean, it was already too late. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he says something about that later. But either way, they had their chances. And they fought back because they had been down by, I want to say, at least 7 or 8 points. And they were able to catch back up to where it was about 5 points difference with 51 seconds left. So, I mean, it was a very good game. But let's trying to see if there was any other game for the tournament that really stood out. I mean, that Pitt Mississippi State for the playing game, that was a good game.
Yeah, it was. It really was. You know, they was on at the beginning of the season. They was talking about firing him and there's a bunch of stuff they had going on about him, but I mean, do you think they fire him now? Even thinking about it, I mean, you know, they made a solid run in the tournament. From what they started from the beginning of the season, like the coach said, I listened to him at the end. Listened to him after one of the games. He said, you know, we got getting healthy at the right time, and that's the most important thing. You know, you can't predict the injury. And so you'll have guys on your, you know, down for the starters and they get injured, you know, that turns your whole season into shambles. and you know, for a few weeks, hope for at least a few weeks if you can get them back. But if it's a long-term injury, if you don't have a deep roster, I mean, if you don't have a deep roster, it's a grind for the other players.
I don't know how good of a coach Jeff Capel is at Pitt, but I know one thing. He can recruit.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think. He recruited Blake Griffin to Oklahoma. I think he probably did a ton of recruiting when he was Duke. I mean, I'm not a Jeff Capel hater by any stretch of the imagination. I actually think he's a decent coach, and I'm surprised he didn't get a little more run for the Duke job. But can't knock his recruiting, that's for sure.
No.
That is definitely true, although I'm curious to see how UCLA does just because how they had their player get hurt at the end of the game.
Yeah, oh, nasty. Nasty injury.
Yeah, that's why I'm hoping that he's going to be hopefully better by game time tomorrow because while seeing that, they already lost one player to a broken – I think it was a broken leg or a knee.
Mm.
Why did UCLA win the whole thing? So –
you know, UCLA, they're legit.
And Mick Cronin can coach. I mean, a lot of people talk about, you know, all these high-level coaches, but Mick Cronin may have been one of the best hires that has been made to a Power 5 recently. And I think UCLA has very much a puncher's chance in this thing, maybe even more so.
Yeah, he is one. I agree with you on that, though. He is one of the better coaches in the country. Like, seriously, I really like him.
I'm definitely curious to see how he is going to go against Mark Few tomorrow because that's one of the games I'm looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
So, my fingers crossed about that. And let's see. Erwin, I know you got to leave in a second. Is there anything else that for the tournament that you could think of you want to talk about?
Why not? You talk about Marquette, talk about Alabama. Marquette, man, you know, they're one of those teams as well. Marquette is I like them. They're tough. They play well. Another team, Xavier. Xavier's been playing well the entire season. I like because I watched them quite a few times. They got a kid that's, you know, from Alabama that's on their roster. And, I think they're a good team. I think they could possibly advance. I don't know. They got their hands full. I know that. But, you know, you never know. Because, again, at one point in time, I actually thought Miami. I like Miami. I thought Miami was going to advance, and so. But you know, said what Wilson has done at Indiana as well. I mean, I think he's one of the better coaches as well in the country.
And you talk about a guy that was on the hot seat. Entering the year, I mean,
right?
That seat was filled with coals for Mike Woodson and Indiana to get to this point. And you know, I mean, they ran up against a very good Miami team. The one thing that sticks out to me too is Alabama. I mean, you know, you look at it, and everybody said they were going to have a time if they had Virginia. Well, it's not like it's easy just because they've got San Diego State, who is a very good team. Now, you may say that the bottom half of the bracket really opened up for them with, some upsets with Arizona going down.
Arizona, Purdue.
But Creighton, I like Creighton. I like Creighton a lot.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's easy for Alabama. I mean, I know you want it to be easy, but, you know, I don't know.
We all want it to be easy. But, again, like you said, San Diego State is a team. They have a deep roster as well. They play 9-10 players. They play hard. And again, you can't look at, you know, a lot of people talking about, you know, the league they played in, and you know, you can't look at it now. It's an NCAA tournament. You can't worry about what conference they come from and all that stuff, what they did during the regular season, because everything is out the window. It's a totally different season once the NCAA tournament rolls around. And so, you know, and it only takes, you know, you to be on one night, you know, and you know, you can beat anybody. And then it takes you one night, you can be off and you can lose to anybody. So, again, I still like our chances. I still think we're one of the deepest team in the country. It won't be a cakewalk by a long shot. And then, you know, like you said, if we advance, if we play against run up on Creighton. Creighton is a good team as well.
Yep. I'm definitely curious to see how Creighton does against Princeton, and we'll see how that goes. That being said, Erwin, if we were going to try to get a hold of you outside of here, how would we do so, sir?
On Facebook, it's just Erwin Dudley. On Instagram, it's Erwin_Dudley35. And then I got Twitter, but I don't even know the handle.
Hey, that's okay, sir.
But yeah, I don't know the handle.
Hey, you know what? That's not a problem, but we appreciate you coming on just because I know you're a busy person, and look forward to next week for you hopefully to be on for our Final Four show, just because between you and going to have Jeremy Monaco and also having at least one other person. But I think watching you and Jeremy talk, that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
We thank you for your time. Hope you have a good rest of your night, and we will see you next week, sir.
All right, you guys have a good one.
Take care, everyone.
Yeah, all right, thanks, sir. All righty. Well, Bob, how do you feel now, sir, that you have been able to be around the SEC legend?
Speechless. Always a fun time to, you know, but to me, Alan, you're a legend too. So it's always a fun time for me to run into anybody in the broadcasting field and everything. And, you know, it's March Madness. It's fun to just get on and talk about it. I mean, you know, you've got at least three tournaments that we take interest in, but then there's more. There's the NIT, there's the NCAA women's, there's the NCAA men's. You've got the, you know, other tournaments floating around too. So if you say there's no basketball to watch, then I'm going to give you a strange look.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, right now I'm actually watching the end of a Utah Valley in Cincinnati, whereas Utah Valley, the unseeded for the NIT quarterfinal, they're up 72-66 with 19.2 seconds left in the game. Oh. And Utah Valley, if they make it to Vegas, they're not a team to laugh at anymore, because, I mean, that team actually is coached by Mark Madsen,
yep,
who played in the NBA. So, I mean, he knows what he's doing, and that's pretty good, although I did see that one of their players, he may not be able to join. They're saying this could be his last game because I guess his wife's getting ready to have a baby. And so, that's
not an excuse. You just have more babies. You can get there for the rest of them.
Well, it's a sports shop, but yeah, no, I mean, I'm not going to go down that road, but just I understand how it is when you want to be there for that event. But still, it's interesting. I mean, that still is a major props regardless, because, I mean,
yeah,
it's 73-66 now at 9.7 seconds. I mean, it's going to be a lot more difficult for Cincinnati to advance than, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, sir.
Yeah, I'm just saying you should be there for all your children's births, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course. I know we both did that. So, I mean, real quick, let's hit the NIT, okay?
Okay.
So, you had UAV go against Vanderbilt with UAV winning. Wisconsin, they beat Liberty, which that was a very close game, and they had to fight for that one. And then Wisconsin actually was able to beat Oregon. So it's Wisconsin, North Texas, Looks like it's going to be Utah Valley and Vanderbilt for the Final Four for the NIT. The only one that anyone would really even think about right now would be Wisconsin, but I don't feel as confident about Wisconsin, Bob. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, because I mean, Wisconsin.
No name schools.
Yeah, well, I mean, wow. Did you just call North Texas and Utah Valley no names?
Well, they're not. They don't get as much publicity as other teams. How about that?
I'm trying to keep you from I'm trying to keep you from being targeted by our friends from North Texas and Utah Valley. I don't want them to come out.
Fair enough. They'll just have me to go on Twitter soon. That's all. It's okay. No worries. I mean, yeah, and actually, they'll be by the time we talk next time, it'll be time for the last game. We'll find out who the champion's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it should definitely be interesting for sure. And, you know, if you looked at it, and I don't have all the winners in front of me, but I know the NIT winner has been a springboard for the next year for the just for the season. So, I mean, you can't say that the NIT doesn't mean anything at all, because it most certainly does.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have all the I have the bracket in front of me, and I mean, I would say Wisconsin's had a relatively hard route, although, because North Texas, Wisconsin, they're both two seeds. UAB and Cincinnati, or UAB is a four seed. Utah Valley wasn't even ranked.
Right.
So, I mean, I may pick the underdog here. I may say it's going to be Utah Valley. And
well, they are coached by Mark Madsen, so.
Yeah, I think I'm going to pick Utah Valley. And I'm going to go against Grain. I'm going to pick North Texas.
Let me look at my bracket real quick. So we've got a situation to where it's going to be North Texas and Wisconsin, and Utah Valley against UAB. I'm going to go North Texas and UAB in the finals.
Okay. And then we'll be able to pick the NIT champion next week. So.
Right.
Now, before we jump back into the men's tournament, let's talk about the women's tournament for a minute. Have you been able to see how some of the games there have gone?
I've been following. I have not watched a ton of it, to be honest with you. But, you know, the women's bracket, you've got two number one seeds out. So, yep. You know, I think, remember, I picked Iowa to go to the Final Four. That Seattle region is definitely opened up for the Hawkeyes right now. Everything else, though, I mean, you know, you've got I call it the Virginia Tech region. All top four still left in that bracket. I think things have opened up for LSU maybe, too. I mean, they got to get past Utah, which is no easy task. But at the top, you have 9-4. Does it really matter with South Carolina's bracket?
Well, I mean, the thing about LSU, if Angel Reese keeps doing what she's doing every game,
right,
having a double-double, and I think the last game she had, 24 points? 25 rebounds and 8 assists, something like that. I mean, that's, if you can't guard against something like that, you're going to be in trouble. I mean, she's just making the her coming out party for the tournament. I mean, it's just how Clark is for Iowa.
If you look at those stats real quick, she had 14 offensive, Reese had 14 offensive boards. 14 offensive boards. Michigan had 5 as a team. Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, I think that LSU is playing really, really good basketball right now, and Reese has got to be the drum leader. Like you said, Angel Reese has just been phenomenal, only a sophomore, so she would be back. You don't have this problem of people really leaving the women's game for the WNBA or even greener pastures yet. It's not a problem like the men's have been. But, you know, the thing that I look at in the women's game, if you look at the early round games, like first and second, and you see a one or a two seed, they normally beat the living tar out of the other teams to where it is a close – it seems like a mismatch in the men's bracket is still closer than a mismatch in the women's bracket. Does that make sense?
It does. And I mean, for Stanford, they came into a buzzsaw against Ole Miss because, remember, Ole Miss took UConn down to the wire. So, I'm sorry, South Carolina, they took them down to the wire. So they can do that against South Carolina. You knew Stanford was going to be in trouble.
Don't get me wrong. There are exceptions to the rules, without a doubt. But, I mean, like, you know, if I'm just looking at a few 215 matchups here. In the women's game, we had 93 to 61, 95 to 43, 95 to 52, and 103 to 77.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the closest game there is probably, honestly, it's probably the 103 to 77, and that's still a 26-point margin.
Yeah.
So it just seems like the gap, and, you know, I like what Irwin touched on, and you for that matter too, the gap in men's is not as large as it was. I think, you know, lower 15 seeds, 16 seeds winning, while it's still shocking, it's not enough to, you know, send most of us to our emergency room. But in the women's game, it's just so funny in terms of the one and twos, especially. The margins are so, so wide.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, one game that I'm looking forward to coming up for the women's tourney. I mean, yes, I am biased, but Ohio State and UConn, I think that's going to be a heck of a game because you've got Gino Auriemma going against one of his assistants who's a head coach at Ohio State. So, I mean, I really think that's going to be, like I said, biased, but I think it's going to be probably one of the games of the tourney right there. I mean, that, and I know you'll be watching Virginia Tech and Tennessee because that's going to be another good game because between those two games, you got the two most famous blue bloods that are still in the tournament.
Yeah, Tennessee has won their first game by 45, won their second game by 47.
Yep.
I mean, that's, you know, the Hokies coming off only a 25-point win in the first round and a 12-point win in the second round. So, it's funny. I think there was an article about this, and I cannot remember the year. I want to say the late 90s when the roles were flip-flopped. Tech was the 4 seed. Tennessee was the 1 seed, coached by Pat Summitt. Tennessee was just on a buzzsaw then. I mean, you're going to see your Sweet 16 games on the women's side. You're going to see a few close ones, but I think you're going to see some that are just, you know, blowouts. And I don't say that to disparage anybody, but I'll bet South Carolina is probably leading the charge.
Oh, yeah. That, I mean, as long as Leah Boston's going to be having as long as she keeps leading the train for South Carolina, they're going to be very hard to stop. So, because the games we have for the Sweet 16 right now, you have South Carolina, UCLA, you have Notre Dame, you have Maryland, you have Miami, you have Villanova. You have LSU, you have Utah, you have Ole Miss, you have Louisville, you have Colorado, you have Iowa, you have Virginia Tech, you have Tennessee, and you have Ohio State, and you have UConn.
I think I still have 3 of my final 4 left.
I have all 4 of my final 4 for the women still intact.
All right, show off. I think the only one I missed was Indiana. And if I can repick that, which I will do, I'd probably take LSU right now, which I think you did.
I did. I picked LSU over Indiana. So,
yep.
I did lose Indiana. So, Miami got me with that. But I mean, the Cavender Twins have made sure that Miami's on the map this year, which that's a heck of a thing for them. So, they're doing great. Yeah, for my picks for the Elite Eight. I had South Carolina. I had Maryland. I had Indiana. I had LSU. I had Stanford. I had Iowa. I had Virginia Tech, and I had Ohio State.
I think I had Notre Dame beating Maryland. I'm not sure about that. And I think I had UConn beating Ohio State.
Well, mistakes happen, sir, but it's okay. I'm not going to hold that one against you.
And by the way, Notre Dame new coach today as well on the men's side, Micah Shrewsbury.
Yep, he because Mike Frey, this was his last year there, so hopefully wish him all the best wherever he's going to go next. So we'll see what happens with that. Now, for the Final Four, by the time we come back, it'll be time for the women's Final Four. So I still have South Carolina, Iowa, LSU, and Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I think the women's Final Four is going to be pretty anticlimactic because I think everybody and their brother and their brother's brother and their brother's brother's brother is picking South Carolina to win. I would think it, South Carolina and Iowa would be interesting in the national semifinal. But, you know, I mean, wow. I mean, who on the right side of the bracket can beat South Carolina? I don't say Ohio State.
No, I mean, the thing about South Carolina against Iowa, Caitlin Clark, she's been the majority of the scoring for Iowa. So if she doesn't have a good game, Iowa's going to have a huge issue because for her, it's not only that she scores, it's when she gets her triple-doubles because it seems like the bigger the tournament game or the bigger the game, she always steps up. But I just think against South Carolina, she's going to be outnumbered. I mean, that's why I'm curious to see about if Virginia Tech loses and LSU makes the final, I wouldn't be mad just because I would like to see that matchup to happen before just to see if LSU would be able to show up better compared to how it was the first time.
I think if South Carolina loses, they're going to have to contribute to the loss because I think that they're going to have to play, you know, a bad game for somebody to catch them. I think if South Carolina plays a great game, forget about it. If they play a good game, maybe got a chance. But you got to hope they play a bad game.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you on that. Well, real quick, why don't we let's see what we had for our men's brackets, and I'll tell you which teams I had making it, and, well, history said otherwise.
And then you're going to repick.
Yeah, well, I had Virginia, Arizona, Houston, Texas A&M, Purdue, Michigan State, Kansas, and Gonzaga.
Let me ask you a quick question. Sure. We've got 16 teams left in this thing. Give me your bottom one or bottom two in each region.
Okay.
So the one or two that you do not think would win.
I hate to say it, I would say for the West region, I'm not as confident on Arkansas. And I'm not convinced about UCLA right now because their player is still hurt. I think they're in trouble.
You know, it's funny because I look at the West region and I think anybody could come out of there. I mean, because Eric Musselman is a very good coach at Arkansas, and he's a very good tournament coach. I look at the Midwest bracket. I mean, if you made me rank them 1-4, I would probably say Miami is my fourth best, but they still have a chance. If you look at the South bracket, you know, I'm probably a little down on Princeton because I think when you have like almost a week to or 3 or 4 days to sit on it, I think you might be able to lose some momentum that you had going. With that being said, I think Florida Atlantic probably has the worst shot right now. I think they go out by Tennessee tomorrow. And after that, you know, sitting here thinking about it, Izzo works some magic in the tournament. I don't know what it is, but Kansas State's a very good team. But with that being said, Florida Atlantic would be, out of the Sweet 16, probably my 16th choice to win. Okay. Princeton may be my 15th, but Kansas State may be my 14th. I don't know why. I sat here and thought about it, and Coach Tang, in his first year, they've done really well at Kansas State, but mark it down. I don't think Kansas State has a very good shot, so they'll probably win the national title.
Hey, we'll see what happens. Although, think about Izzo right now, no matter what happens, it doesn't matter because of just how the team has been able to not only come together for the tournament, but just how they've come together for the university after they've been rebounding since that shooting happened.
If you told me they'd be the last Big Ten team alive, I don't know that I would have totally believed you.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, we'll definitely see what happens. And for my final four picks, actually, no, I'll do those next week because we will have time for that. So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes. But the two teams I still have that are active are Michigan State. Actually, I have three teams. I have Houston, I have Michigan State, and I have Gonzaga.
I had Purdue. I mean, not Purdue. I had UCLA all along winning it, so I'll stick with that. I had Texas in the Final Four. I'll stick with that. That left side's hard. I'm going to probably go Tennessee and Alabama, but I don't feel good about it.
Yeah, I mean, I did a second chance bracket, which I can always talk about next time. So, but I just, right now, I'm going to go with what I did for my bracket this time since it was what I picked in the beginning. And, well, you can always hope for a good bracket, but then reality comes in and destroys it. Isn't that the truth?
No. And nice to see you wearing a throwback shirt tonight, a team that's no longer in existence.
Yep. No, I've been a diehard fan of this team my entire life and got thrown out of their training facility for 3 months one time. That was a interesting story I'll have to tell you about at some point.
Do you have a Commander shirt?
I do not.
Shame. Shame, shame.
Yeah, you know what? They're worst things in life, sir. I will survive about that. Although, one thing I did want to make sure, actually, one thing that we talked about off the air is for that one gentleman who was trying to break Pistol Pete's record, he came up, I believe, 3 points short.
Yep.
I saw that he had talked today that he felt that he should have been allowed to go into a postseason tournament. Now, here's my issue with that, sir. When you make a tournament, if you win your conference, you should automatically have a good bid for it. I don't think that they made it to their conference final. I don't remember off the top of my head, but the thing is, their record was 14-19. And the only tournament they could have gotten in would have been the CBI. And for them to get in the CBI, they would have had to pay $28,000 to get in.
No, I mean, if you got $28,000 laying around.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't feel, this is my personal opinion, I don't feel like he deserved to be in that tournament. I mean, if you're not even close to 500.
It's very, very interesting. Antoine Davis of Detroit Mercy. And the exact words when you look up the quote is, "I got cheated out of something." Very interesting. I mean, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. But the thing is, he can say he got cheated, but if you don't win the games, it feels like you're cheating yourself, not you got cheated. I know that's probably an unpopular statement or view, but that's how it feels like.
You were 14-19 in the Horizon League.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you lost in the tournament to Youngstown State. I don't understand where the, you know, I mean, if you want to, essentially, when I hear him say, "I feel like I got cheated," I hear it as a, like, you know, well, if my teammates were better, we'd be in the tournament. That's the way I hear it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know if you've checked lately, but last time I looked, basketball is not an individual game.
No, and I mean, it's kind of like how, I don't know if you watched the Kobe Bryant Memorial when Shaquille O'Neal spoke.
I did not, but I have a feeling I might have seen the highlights.
I'm pretty sure you did see this highlight because they were talking about how Kobe would not pass the ball. So Shaq had gone up to Kobe and said, "Kobe, there's no I in team." He said, "No, but there is an I in win, mother bleep."
Right. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people say the whole there is a I in win and everything. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're 14-19 at Detroit Mercy. I'm not trying to knock the Detroit Mercy thing at all. However, you know, if you want to be in a situation to break his record, I mean, to be honest with you, you probably could have gone to a smaller school and gotten into the tournament. So, I mean, if you're mad, I mean, honestly, I think the first thing you got to look at is I might not have put my teammates in a position to have played well enough. The end. I mean, why are we still talking about this? You know what I'm saying? Not yeah. You and I, but him.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing about it. When I was taking a look at some of his information, is that it took him 5 years to get close to his record. But when Pistol Pete played, they didn't have a three-point line. Right. Because if they had a three-point line, with all due respect, there's no way he would have caught his record. I would bet money on that. Because the way Pistol Pete was as a player, I mean, he was amazing. So I understand this gentleman can feel cheated, but the only one who cheated, in my personal view, is himself. He didn't.
Well, and you hit the nail on the head. You hit the nail on the head with something you said. I mean, there was no scoring, or there was no three-point line to help out some of these guys. So, I mean, you know, like people like Pistol Pete and others who are, you know, essentially doing this with a, I mean, dude, you think about it. I don't know if you've ever seen the highlights. I think I can't remember what year it was, but I think when Jerry West hit like a half court shot for the Lakers to put them into the finals or whatever, it's a two. You got to think a lot of those shots, like way back when, were twos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean,
you can throw a Hail Mary. You can throw a Hail Mary before the 3-point line. And guess what? It was a two. If you were down three, you better hope, like heaven, somebody is near you and fouls you.
I mean, I would say that since we're going down that route real quick, that's part of the reason why Bill Russell was so much more dominant than everybody else, because since there was only 2 points instead of 3-pointers,
mm-hmm.
because of how he was, even if he didn't score the most points, he was still the man who was going to get the most rebounds that was going to turn the tide for his team. And it didn't matter. So, I mean, that's why with the 3-point line, you're able to see how people are able to score more points and make other things happen. It just is how he feels cheated when it took him 5 years. When Pistol Pete, when he was in college, he wasn't even allowed to play on the varsity as a freshman. He had to wait till a sophomore year
right.
before he could play, and he still was able to accomplish everything he accomplished at LSU in 3 years. I mean, maybe it's just the person who appreciates history, but I'm kind of glad he didn't break the record. I know that sounds bad, but it just with how Pistol Pete was, That record, if it does get broken, that's great. But I mean, it's hard to see anyone breaking it.
Yeah, it sounds very bad, by the way, when you say it like that. But anyway, if you look at Wilt, I'm just kidding you. If you look at Wilt Chamberlain, when he scored 100, 36 field goals made, 28 free throws made. He had to make 64 shots to get 100 points. Now, I mean, technically, I guess somebody could make, I'm not going to do the math, but I mean, you know, if you hit 33s and you hit 10 free throws, that's 100 right there. I mean, you know, Kobe had 81, I know, since then. Yep. And, you know, it's funny because there have been people that, you know, everybody benefits off the three-point line. Is it unfair to say, well, you're only scored this much because of three-point line? No, I mean, why am I going to penalize people for playing on the rules? But, you know, don't penalize, you know, Will scored 100 without the three-point line. So don't you, you know, cry me a river because, well, I scored 81 with the three-point line. Okay, good. Congrats. I'm not trying to knock it.
Yeah, I mean, what he accomplished at Detroit Mercy, that's great, but it just – it more comes off like he's being a sore loser just because the way that the team the season went and how they didn't weren't able to do more. So he's like, okay, well, I'm going to say this and, well, it's going to go from there, which, I mean, if he makes it to the NBA, that's great. I wish him nothing but the best. But the thing is, as much as he wanted to earn it,
right,
there should have been more wins, and they would have definitely had a better chance to earn it. That's just my humble opinion, though, sir.
Do you know how many people have scored over 70 since in the history of the NBA?
Three?
13.
Really? Okay.
Yep. Do you know how many of those 13 were done by Wilt Chamberlain?
Six.
So essentially half almost were scored by one person. I'm trying to help make your point for you and make you not the bitter old grump.
You know what? I appreciate that. I appreciate that, sir. Real quick, I was taking a look at the NCAA for the winter season, and I saw that the champions for what's going on. The men's hockey tournament starts tonight, so we're going to see how that goes, and we'll be able to find a men's champion probably within the next 2 weeks. For women's hockey, Minnesota won. They beat Ohio State. For rifle, Alaska Fairbanks won, sorry. Utah won for skiing. Men's swimming is getting ready to start. UVA won for women's swimming. Men and women indoor track, Arkansas became the first school since Oregon to win both national championships. Wrestling, Penn State won the national championship. Patrick Horry won the 125-pound weight class. Spencer Lee for Iowa had been trying to be the, the 13th person to win the 4 national championships. He came up just short in the semifinals, so that still is a huge accomplishment to already have 3 championships and almost go for your 4th. So it's a pity he didn't make it, but he was going to, and he made it the whole year. That was his first loss of the entire year. So congratulations to him. For 133, it was Vito Arajau. 141 was Andrew Alvarez. 149, Yanni Bekamahalas. 157 was Austin O'Connor. 165 was Keegan O'Toole. 174 was Carter Storace. 184 was Aaron Brooks. 197 was Nino Bonacorsi. And heavyweight at 285 was Mason Paris. So congratulations to all those national champions, and we'll see what the spring season holds for different sports. So, Bob, if we were trying to get a hold of you outside of here, I know that's dangerous, but how would we do so, sir?
Barring that I'm awake, I will answer the tweets later at the Sports Buffet. My YouTube is getting a little bit better. The Sports Buffet. Facebook, you can reach me, Bob Alves. Text, just put in some random numbers on the phone and maybe you'll get lucky. But yeah, and the Gmail, you could email me at thesportsbuffet@gmail.com. But I mean, Alan, you know from personal experience, it's very risky to reach out to me. Why do you want to do that?
Hey, well, we got to make sure that we learn about sports. And you, sir, are someone that we can always learn a lot from. And I appreciate that. And next week, we're going to have the Final Four episode, like I said, with me, you. We're going to have Irwin on again. We're going to have Coach Jeremy Monso again. And we may have Nicholas Hodel as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. And we'll definitely see what happens with that. If you're going to find me, you can find me at Instagram at alan.west.46. I am on Twitter, Alan F. West. The tweet's going to be posted at some point. I'm working on it. It's going slowly. So
if it's an emergency and you contact Alan on Twitter, he may see it in the next administration.
Yeah, that's highly possible. That, and I am on Facebook as well. But other than that, this has been the Top 25 Rundown. You can follow us on Twitter at TheSportsCast1 and visit us on our website, thesportscast.next. Make sure to check out our show schedules at the week. Jersey Boys are tomorrow night. My name is Alan West. That is Bob Alves. Have a wonderful night, everybody.